Good evening. Trump's gaffe. Airports in 1776. Trump threatens an addendum to include his census citizenship question, and affordability fuels the homeless crisis in New York. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for July 5th, 2019. And coal tycoon Chris Klein, who worked his way out of West Virginia's underground mines to amass a fortune and become a major Republican donor, has died in a helicopter crash outside a string of islands he owned in the Bahamas. Klein and his 22-year-old daughter, Cameron, were on board the aircraft with five others when it went down Thursday. The death of the 60-year-old magnate led to eulogies from industry leaders, government officials, and academics who described Klein as a visionary who was generous with his $1.8 billion fortune. He formed his own energy development business, the Klein Group, which grew into one of the country's top coal producers. When he thought mining in the Appalachian region was drying up, he started buying reserves in the Illinois Basin in what turned out to be a smart investment in high-sulfur coal, according to a website based on coal energy futures. Klein sold most of his interests for $1.4 billion and then dropped $150 million into a metallurgical coal mine in Nova Scotia. That's according to Forbes magazine. His deep pockets eventually opened to politics. He donated heavily to President Donald Trump and other Republicans. Klein gave the president's inaugural committee $1 million in 2017 and shared thousands more with conservative groups as well as committees representing GOP bigs such as Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Florida and Florida Senator Marco Rubio. That's according to federal records. And President Trump on Friday blamed a malfunctioning teleprompter for a gaffe in his Independence Day speech, in which he mistakenly said the Army took over airports during the American Revolution and seemed to confuse that war with the War of 1812.
The Continental Army suffered a bitter winter of Valley Forge, found glory across the waters of the Delaware, and seized victory from Cornwallis of Yorktown. Our army manned the airport. It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do. And at Fort McHenry, under the rocket's red glare, it had nothing but victory. And when dawn came, their star-spangled banner waved defiant.
Not only were airplanes and, by extension, airports nowhere close to being invented at that stage in American history, but the Battle of Fort McHenry was staged during the War of 1812. This was also when the national anthem, which that section of the speech referenced, was written.
Yeah, the teleprompter went out. It kept going on. And then at the end, it just went out. It went kaput. So I could have said, and actually right in the middle of that sentence, it went out. And that's not a good feeling. When you're standing in front of millions and millions of people on television, and I don't know what the final count was, but that went all the way back to the Washington Monument. And I guess the rain knocked out the teleprompter. So, but no, it's not that. I knew the speech very well, so I was able to do it without a teleprompter. But the teleprompter did go out, and it was actually hard to look at anyway because it was rain all over it.
On Twitter, the hashtag Revolutionary War Airports swiftly trended, with many a Twitter wag making mock-up images showing the rebels taking airports from the crown. Trump's speech, heavy on American exceptionalism and militarism, got generally positive reviews since the president steered clear from divisive political issues like immigration and the size of his crowds. The Washington Post called the speech a recruiting pitch for the military, as Air Force and other hardware made seven separate buzzes over the crowd along the wall. Last month, the Pentagon asked the White House not to politicize events involving the military after an uproar created by a White House staffer who directed Navy personnel in Japan to obscure the USS John S. McCain ahead of a presidential visit. McCain was a frequent critic of Trump, who earned the president's enmity for opposing his signature call to end Obamacare. Meanwhile, the Trump administration refuses to back down over its bid to put a contentious citizenship question on the 2020 U.S. Census. A court case will move forward over whether officials were motivated by racial bias in seeking to add the question. Civil rights groups in some states strongly object to the citizenship question proposal, calling it a Republican ploy to scare immigrants into not participating in the census. That would lead to a population undercount in Democratic-leaning areas with high immigrant populations. The Supreme Court blocked blocked Trump's first effort to add the question, faulting the administration's stated reason. The legal fight seemed to be over earlier in the week when the government said it would start printing census forms without the citizenship question. But the battle reignited on Wednesday when Trump reversed course via tweet. He again addressed the census while speaking to reporters at the White House.
I just spoke with the Attorney General. We have a number of different avenues. We could use all of them or one. We're doing very well on that issue. We're spending $15 to $20 billion on a census. We're doing everything. We're finding out everything about everybody. Think of it. $15 to $20 billion, and you're not allowed to ask them, are you a citizen? And by the way, if you look at the history of our country, it's almost always been asked. So we're fighting very hard against a system that's a very difficult system, but we'll make a decision. The Attorney General is working on that right
now. What's the reason, Mr. President, for trying to get a citizenship question?
Well, you need it for many reasons. Number one, you need it for Congress. You need it for Congress, for districting. You need it for appropriations. Where are the funds going? How many people are there? Are they citizens? Are they not citizens? You need it for many reasons.
The U.S. Constitution specifically assigns the job of overseeing the census to Congress, limiting the authority of the president over it, which could complicate an effort to add the question by executive order. The census is used to allot seats in the House and distribute some $800 billion in federal services, including public schools, Medicaid benefits, law enforcement, and highway repairs. And in a statement to reporters that CNN says is a lie, Trump claimed that North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un had refused to meet with President Obama when he was in the White House, despite what Trump says was Obama's begging for a meeting.
Jong-un, why did you say that? Why did you say he was begging for a meeting?
He called Kim Jong-un on numerous occasions to meet. President Obama wanted to meet with Kim Jong-un, and Kim Jong-un said no. Numerous occasions he called, and right now we have a very nice relationship. We've done a lot, and we've gotten our hostages back. We're getting the remains back. A lot of good things are happening, and there's been no nuclear testing. During President Obama, they were nuclear testing. They were sending missiles. Right now, everything's nice and quiet.
CNN says after an extensive fact check earlier this week, there is no evidence Obama ever tried to secure a meeting with Kim Jong-un, let alone that he called North Korea on numerous occasions, as Trump said. Multiple former Obama officials, including former National Security Advisor Susan Rice and former Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes, have gone on the record to declare Trump's claims false. Independent experts contacted by CNN also said Trump was wrong. Reportedly, Obama pursued a policy commonly known as strategic patience of declining to directly engage with the Kim's regime at all, let alone at the presidential level, as long as they refused to stop what was considered their belligerent behavior. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. In New York City, a new digital affordability index published by Comptroller Scott Stringer explores how the climbing costs of housing, transportation, health care, and other necessities put a very real squeeze on New York City households, leaving many residents with dwindling savings. The report shows increases in food and other basic living expenses, even as lower-wage jobs fail to keep pace with rising costs. But by far, the biggest contributor to the rising wealth gap, as well as a striking increase in homeless people in the city, are skyrocketing rents. Comptroller Stringer spoke with WBAI.
It is getting tougher and tougher to make it in this city, especially if you're middle class or struggling to get there. We have put out this affordability index because we want to break down the numbers to answer three questions about four representative New York City households: single adults living alone, single parent with two children, and two adult cohabiting a couple with two children, right? So the questions that we want to answer is, can typical New York City households afford a basic lifestyle? And what does it cost to just get through the day? And so we use census data to calculate average incomes for each household and other data from the American Community Survey. And we found some pretty compelling data. Well, typical incomes have increased by just 1.9% between 2005 and 2017 for single adult households and 3% for other households. But the median rents in New York City increase by average 4% a year. And they grew nearly 61% for a one-bedroom and 53% for two-bedrooms since 2005. So now the median rent for a one-bedroom increased by $600 to almost $1,600. This is a real challenge for struggling New Yorkers, and this is why we are driving people into homeless shelters and driving people out of New York City. The entrance fee to our city is a $2 million condo. We're not going to attract our immigrants. We're not going to attract people from around the world to come to our city. This has always been a city that thrived on people coming here and making it here. But if you can't afford food, if you can't afford basic rent, even with a reasonable job, you're not going to be able to come to the city. And that means the New York that we always took for granted, the New York that always made this place so special, our diversity, the notion that you come here with no money in your pocket and you build a life for you and your family, that's what we're losing here. I just did a child care proposal because right now we need to subsidize child care for working parents. Thousands of people are dropping out of the workforce because child care costs $21,000 a year. So we literally have people choosing between their careers or staying at home. And so these are some of the challenges: child care costs, housing costs, even food costs is up an average 2% per year. Transportation costs up 3% per year. This may not sound like a lot, but when you look at our affordability index year after year, this is the crisis of the unaffordable city. And government has got to step up and build real affordable housing, create real programs to expand child care, to make sure that we continue to give people the quality of life that they expect living in New York City. Typical incomes increased by just 1.9% per year over the last 12 years, and yet everything else is going up. So we have stagnant wages. We're seeing an increase in low-wage jobs, but the jobs, the income from those jobs are not keeping up with the gentrification in our community. So there's a lot that has to happen. We can't just bemoan the affordability index. We have to build real affordable housing. We have to expand child care. We need a whole understanding of job retraining for middle-aged New Yorkers and younger people so they can access some of these jobs that pay more money. But we also need an overall plan to tackle the affordability issues in our city. And the reason I put out the index is to show very clearly how many people, middle-class people, working poor, are being driven into shelter, being driven out of New York City. That is not the city that we want. We need to have a real economic justice plan, and that means expanding the economy, giving people in all the boroughs the opportunity to make it easy to work. We have to realign our transportation system. You know, the days of rush hour being from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. or 5 to 7 p.m., those days are over. Younger people are working later. People who are, you know, driving cabs, taking care of children, other people's children and grandchildren, the subway system isn't even aligned to give them the opportunity to work, get to work faster and get to home faster. So we need to rethink what are the priorities in New York City that can expand the economy. And I hope that this index will show people, highlight what it's like for a single parent with two children, what it's like just to live in parts of the city where a one-bedroom apartment has risen in rent 61%. Since 2005. We need to build low-income housing the same way mayors built it with public housing, LaGuardia, in the 1930s. Lindsay and Rockefeller with the Mitchell-Lama housing program. We still need creativity. We have to be less reliant on REBNY developers to build the next generation of affordable housing. I'll send you my Housing for All proposal that speaks to building 85,000 low-income housing units. You know, there's 580,000 people who are one step away from being homeless in the city. You know, one international financial crisis, another Trump debacle, and suddenly we could have a real homeless crisis, more than we have today on our hands. We used to spend 1.5% managing the homeless crisis. In New York City, we're now spending 3.2%. $3.2 billion on managing the homeless crisis. But the number of people in homeless shelters is going up. Half of them are children. We have got to align homeless services with building affordable housing. And that's something that we have to talk about in the next year or two. Everywhere I go as controller in every borough and every community, at town hall meetings, roundtables I'm having, just talking to people on the street, there's nothing going on but the rent and the increase in food costs and child care costs. We have to have a way to make sure working people, especially the people who built our city, can stay here. And we want to welcome new people from all over the world because that fuels, you know, that fuels our economy as well.
Scott Stringer is New York City comptroller, often cited as a possible candidate for mayor. Stringer told WBAI he has plenty of time left in his current job and he's too busy to think that far ahead. And the Coalition for the Homeless is the premier group that fights for homeless people in New York City. The coalition's statistics paint a grim portrait. In April 2019, there were 61,782 homeless people, including 14,826 homeless families, with 21,709 homeless children sleeping each night in the New York City municipal shelter system. The number of homeless New Yorkers sleeping each night in municipal shelters is now 70% higher than it was 10 years ago. The number of homeless single adults is 146% higher than it was 10 years ago. The coalition also says the biggest cause of homelessness in New York City is lack of affordable housing. Coalition for the Homeless Policy Director Giselle Ruthier spoke with WBAI earlier today. She says a hot housing market and a poor city response is driving the crisis.
We don't have kind of one housing market that's available to everybody in New York City. We actually have a plethora of apartments that are renting over $2,000 a month, but we have very few units that are renting for below $800 a month, say. And so people who are low income are squeezed out of the market, and a lot of folks are forced into homelessness because they're unable to find affordable housing. So the comptroller has actually expressed support for this campaign that we have been running for the past year and a half, which has been calling on the mayor to, as part of his ambitious affordable housing plan, quote-unquote affordable housing plan, it's supposed to create or preserve 300,000 units of affordable housing. We want him to build 24,000 new construction units specifically for homeless households. And preserve at least 6,000 more. And so we're getting at 10% of the total plan. But the emphasis on new construction is really important because when the city finances housing, that if they're preserving housing, they're basically preserving housing for someone who's already living there. And so building new housing is going to allow us to expand the supply of available housing and actually allow someone who's currently in the shelter system to move out into that housing. So really, it is about the supply, and that's part of the reason why a lot of folks who are in shelter who even have access to a rental voucher, whether it be Section 8 or a city-funded voucher, still so challenging for them to find units because there just aren't enough units at those rent levels. So it is really about expanding the housing supply. The city actually has financing mechanisms by which they provide tax breaks and capital subsidies to developers in exchange for developers abiding by affordability requirements that they set. And so those typically run for like 30 years and are often renewed. So they will be quote unquote affordable in perpetuity. Where the challenge is for us and for other homeless advocates and frankly the majority of the city council and other city elected officials other than Mayor de Blasio, we think that when the city is putting public resources behind financing housing, that it needs to be targeted to those who are in the most need. And that for us is people who are literally without homes. And so it's really about prioritizing where the city is financing housing, prioritizing that housing to the greatest needs populations. And they do have the legal authority to make sure that developers are able to maintain that housing and keep that housing at affordable levels. They just haven't been pushing for the lower income bands and homeless set asides explicitly. The city will finance the development and there'll be some units, you know, some number of units at higher rents and some number of units that they're financing at lower rents. And what we want is to make sure that where they're financing buildings, where they're putting public resources into buildings, that they're actually creating enough units specifically for people who are homeless and as well as extremely low income and low income so that we'll actually be able to make a dent in the affordability crisis because that's where the market is the tightest. We don't need government intervention creating units that are renting above $2,000 a month. You know, we've got those in the market because the market's so hot. So where we need that government intervention is to subsidize those lower rent units and make sure that we're going to have them in perpetuity. And most often, the way that city finances affordable housing is by financing mixed income buildings. And so there's a range of rents in each building. But typically, as of now, that has been skewed towards the higher end of the rent spectrum. And so there are plenty of developers out there, including in New York City, we have a very robust network of nonprofit mission-driven developers who are very ready and willing to build housing, low-income housing with city subsidies. So if they're given the appropriate financing and supports, then they're able to do that and can do that all over the city, wherever there's available land, wherever there's available buildings that are ripe for development. I don't know where the mayor is at because he's...
And Ruthier adds, the mayor opposes the coalition's proposals for dealing with homelessness while underestimating the need for affordable housing, and she says she doesn't know why.
Or I don't know what he's thinking, because he has consistently said no to this campaign that we've been running, is consistently said no to building more housing for homeless New Yorkers, even as we've seen levels of homelessness remain and or hit new records under his administration. And so he seems to be dug in and keeps saying we're doing enough when the numbers really don't show that. And so it's very frustrating. And I think the broad support that we have as part of our campaign from other organizations, from many other elected officials in New York City, I think speaks to the broad appeal of it and the fact that people actually want deeply affordable housing in New York. But the mayor is not following through. I think it's really about political will and like the allocation of the resources that we have, which are right now being allocated towards units in his housing plan that we don't need. I mean, there's a full 20% of the units that are scheduled to be built that are going to have rents over $1,600 a month. The market doesn't need those.
Coalition for the Homeless Policy Director Giselle Ruthier spoke with WBAI earlier today, which is Friday, right? And welcome to WBAI. We just have a few minutes. Our number is 212-209-2877. This is Talkback, and you are there to, in the next few minutes, call us and talk to us, talk to me, Paul DiRienzo here in the news department, about the WBAI news. Now, the question we've been laying out the last couple of days at 212-209-2877 is, what does American independence mean to you? What is Independence Day? The 4th of July was yesterday, but this is the whole weekend, the whole Megillah. What does Independence Day mean to you? Would you like to ask that question? Really brief. We really just have a few minutes, and we're looking for really brief, succinct statements by our listeners, and who I'm sure are the type who listen to, who consider these kind of questions very, very carefully. Arnold, this is your chance at 212-209-2877. If you would like to join with us, tell us, ask any question. You're not limited to just telling us what it means to you, but if you have a brief, succinct question about the news, about our coverage of Donald Trump, about our coverage of the 4th of July weekend, about our coverage of issues like homelessness and our coverage of the environmental crises that we are facing here in New York and globally, questions of war and peace in places like Iran and places like Afghanistan and places like Venezuela. If you have a question about that, about the national news stories that we've been covering, like the crisis at the border and the connection between people coming to the border to the United States and the droughts caused by human-made climate change in Central America and how that's causing a drought. These are some of the stories we've covered. And if you want a question or a comment or tell us what the 4th of July means to you, call us at 212-209-2877 while we have a few more minutes left. Well, that was a quick, we had a call, but they are gone already. So it's up to you. I know it takes a few minutes, but reach over for your telephone. Get used to we want to do this much more often now. We want to really give you, the listeners, an opportunity to be part of our newscast every day. And we have somebody on the line. You have a line. Keep it brief. Question or comment?
Yes, I have a comment. I want to comment on the homeless situation that we have all over the country.
Sure. Go ahead. Quick. Brief.
This is David from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I would say that we ought to have a situation where the government would build government housing all over the country available to anyone and index what you'd pay in rent according to what kind of wage or salary that you're earning.
Homeless as housing. Yes, thank you very much. Housing is a human right, something people have been asking for since Franklin Roosevelt was president. Very good. Thank you. You're on the radio. Keep it quick. Thank you.
Hi, yeah, this is Julie. Julie from Yonkers, and
Yonkers.
How are you doing?
All right, go ahead.
You're asking about independence. Independence would mean having the right to have all of our votes, not just the right to vote. There's been a lot of voter suppression, but also the right to have all of our votes for sure accurately counted, which in this era of electronic rigging and hacking and cyber insecurity, there aren't cybersecurity solutions to the problem of electronic rigging.
Thank you very much. That's a very good point. Keep our voting system free and fair, which is not so easy these days. And we have another call on the line. Keep it quick. We don't have a lot of time. You're on. Where are you calling from?
There you are.
You there? Sorry.
I'm on?
Yes, you're on.
I'd like to say that since it's only a half-hour news program, I would prefer more news and less listener feedback.
Oh, they're very good, but we like to do that. We'll keep that in mind. Thank you for that call. All right, we got a couple more minutes if you want to stick in a thanks. Actually, I take that as a compliment because I'm glad that you want to hear another couple of minutes of our news. And I think in the future we might give you that. But I think once in a while it's good to open up the phones and give folks a chance to talk back to the news because it's such a one-way thing. I'm just sort of lecturing you guys and choosing what's important. And I want to hear from you what's important as well. 212-209-2877 is the number. This is WBAI in New York, and we're taking a few calls before the end of the news, which we usually don't do, but occasionally we do. And we want to give folks an opportunity to maybe even promote those stories they think are an important aspect of the news that should be covered, something we've missed, something that should be covered in their communities or neighborhoods. Remember, you can contact me, paulnews@wbai.org. You can send us a letter at WBAI 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. And we don't have a lot of time. And you're
hold on.
We've got somebody on right now. Okay, next caller. You're on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Mr. DiLorenzo.
Go ahead. Keep quick.
Is it any wonder why every other life on this planet doesn't have a problem with housing? But when it comes to human beings, there's a problem.
Very good.
The problem
Thank you.
Is greed.
Yes, greed is the problem. Very good. Next call. Quick.
Okay, wait a minute. Go.
All right, you're on.
Go.
You're on. Go ahead, quick. You're on the radio.
Oh, sorry. I'd like to know who won the surrogates race in Brooklyn.
Okay, we'll look that up. Thank you. Who won the surrogates race in Brooklyn? Most important. All right, that's it. Thanks a lot for calling us, all the folks who called us. It's just a little bit too late, but... And that's some of the news for Friday, July 5th, 2019. The news was produced by Linda Perry, and our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Have a great weekend.